football on off the ball.
Yeah, I've just been told that we've broken a few records tonight, which is nice, and I'm delighted for the players, because as sloppy as we were last week, they were excellent tonight. We really were. They controlled the tempo, the energy in the game.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Inside the Odds with NoviBet. Miss out on the final bet builder leg? Get up to a €10 free bet back every day on football's biggest tournament this summer if your bet builder loses. NoviBet. More power to you.
18 plus. Play responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
All right. Maggie Thatcher, Keir Starmer, Harry Kane, Thomas Tuchel. Your boys took one hell of a beating last night. And England are going home, and not the football. Welcome to another episode of Inside the Odds. I'm joined by Matthew Brennan and Phil Egan. How are we, lads?
All right.
All right, yeah. Happy out.
Did we enjoy the game last night, England-Argentina, first and foremost?
Yeah, it was a clash, all right, wasn't it? It was one of them. The first, I see a lot of people saying the first 30 minutes. I think I'd give it the full first half. It was a battle. A lot of kicking. Not a lot of bookings, which, you know, you can take that whatever way you like. But it turned out to be a good one, all right. Yeah. Mm. The result was favourable, I would say.
The referee did let it flow, but I suppose because the game had such tension, that's why it made it so entertaining. You couldn't take your eyes off it.
No, like the first half, you couldn't watch that every game.
No.
But because of the nature of the rivalry, what's at stake? You know, I could appreciate the first half where I was like, you know, there's late hits going in, niggly stuff, and you're kind of thinking, yeah, this is setting it up beautiful for a second half. And a lot of people felt before the game this probably would go the distance. Obviously, it didn't, but it kind of just had that feel about it where I was happy enough to... Very little football played in the first half, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think I flashed up at halftime. I think England, did England have an XG of...
England had 0.03, Argentina had 0.04.
0.05 or
0.04. RT had it as 4, maybe BBC
had it.
Yeah,
I think BBC
five,
had it 0.05, but yeah, it's the lowest in history of the old XG stats.
Yeah.
At halftime, did we think England or Argentina were going to win?
Oh, that's a good, great question.
Well, I would have felt first goal was crucial for England.
Yeah.
So when they got the first goal, I thought this is set up perfect for them. They have their goal and they also have players that can play in the break, which Argentina don't like, as we saw with Romero's yellow card for pulling back Jude Bellingham. You know, there was options on the bench. Obviously, one of the big calls is Rodgers on the right. He sets up Anthony Gordon. Thomas Tuchel looks like he's got that right then, and Jed Spence is a left back, that's all working well. And then it all just went downhill. I would say, I don't think it all went downhill straight after the goal, because there were signs before the goal that Argentina had come out to play in the second half.
Yeah.
And actually, the way England scored the goal is exactly what I would have worried about for Argentina before the match, where they would be susceptible to counterattacks.
Yeah. I think the first chance really of the second half was that Julian Alvarez chance that Pickford saved low
right at the beginning, and he got the ball back again and had a similar sort of chance straight away. I think what scared life out of Thomas Tuchel and prompted those changes to come was that immediately after England didn't go ahead, Giuliano Simeone ended up in on goal and didn't get his shot off, or didn't manipulate his body in the right way to maybe buy a penalty or something like that. Jed Spence got back and made the brilliant tackle, and that was commended at the time. But a few minutes later, or from that moment, really, from that corner onwards, they just drop back and further back and further back. And I mean, we can get on to why they did that and whether they should have done that. Clearly, they shouldn't have, because they didn't go and win the game. But I think you're right, Phil. Yeah, I don't think it was... There were signs, and it wasn't just the substitutions that kind of prompted them to drop back into their shell a little bit. But the only thing, before we move off the first half, because there's so much to get into here, I do think, because our preference, I imagine, and most people listening to this would have been, for the result to go the way it did, I think that lended itself to us enjoying that first half a little bit more, because it was England on the receiving end of maybe the tension and I don't know what the right word for it is, but maybe aggression on the Argentinian behalf. Mm. I think maybe if it had been Argentina and Spain, that first half would have been a little bit more difficult to bear.
Yeah. We have more of a vested interest in England just by the nature of where we're situated,
of course,
in the globe.
Well put.
Yeah, I think on the game as a whole, We kind of understand what the Argentinian mentality is, and we know what the Spanish identity is, and we'll probably get onto that a little bit later. But what's the English identity? I think they're having an identity crisis at the moment by reading some of the papers and listening to some of the slots. What's the England identity, and then what's the Thomas Tuchel England identity?
Well, he was brought in to make sure that there's no repeat of what happened under Gareth Southgate, who's obviously got to a couple of European finals, a World Cup semi-final, World Cup quarter-final. And if he did what Thomas Tuchel did in the second half last night, my God, he would be absolutely eviscerated by the English press. And Tuchel was meant to be this master tactician that when it came to knockout football, he will know what to do. And also, you're throwing in two extra breaks from the hydration breaks are a chance for Thomas Tuchel to get his tactics board out. And after the second hydration break, basically it was just all out Argentina. It was a defence versus attack game.
Yeah.
And England's defence going into the World Cup was one of their weaknesses. Central defensive pairing, you know, John Stones was there, but he hadn't played much football. Mark Gahey obviously was pretty much a lock-in. Mm. Ezri Konsa, like a good player. But you look at maybe some of the other centre halves in the World Cup would just be a level above that. So they've lots of decent centre halves. They had them all pretty much on the pitch at the end, but they weren't good enough.
No.
And in terms of, I know what you mean. Like they can't hold on to the ball.
Yeah.
So there was nobody to take the sting out of the game. Do those players exist in England? There's probably a few of them, but they don't get into the squad because England have always been about running power.
Yeah.
And maybe that's another problem they had where they look tired. And Fabio Capello obviously didn't have a good time as England manager, but he said that the Premier League grinds down the players. He was asked before this tournament, how would England do? He said, they'll turn up and they'll be wrecked.
Yeah.
And they were.
Yeah, they're out on their feet because we kind of thought, like we initially thought, I think everyone thought that, you know, the England fitness levels would outlast the Argentinian fitness levels, especially with the way the games
had gone prior,
previously.
Yeah.
And I think the England coaching staff also thought that, well, at least one of them did, in Anthony Barry. And he said at halftime, I was watching BBC, I don't know if it was shown on RT, but he was saying that we'll use our Premier League power in the second half, we'll play the game in the opposition half, and that's how they'll win the game. And none of that happened.
No, and I think when you say with Capello talking before the tournament and all that sort of stuff about the Premier League grinding the players down, and that would have been something he would have picked up on himself when he was managing it. I think that's the case even more so now than ever before with the way in which the game is played. And that definitely told.
England had the benefit as well where they played only really one game in tough conditions. Maybe two, I suppose the Mexico game was at altitude. But when it regards the weather, they actually played a lot of games in air-conditioned stadiums.
Yeah.
And they played in Boston and New York when the weather was actually quite kind of mild.
Mm.
And they obviously had the game in Miami against Norway. Now they're back to Miami on Saturday against France in the third and fourth place playoff. But England have actually had a pretty good run and they still looked out on their feet towards the end of that game.
And this is the thing as well. I remember early on in the tournament when, and it's easy now, right, for pundits and all that sort of stuff to come out and call out all of the bad stuff that, you know, England put out there and reflect on the tournament as a whole and say, we haven't been good at all, really, barred maybe the second half of the Croatia game. And then turn around and go, now, look, retrospectively, this was always going to happen, but we'll back the team while they're winning and all that sort of stuff. But Thomas Tuchel said after the, it was before the Congo game, that when we start playing the good, essentially, to paraphrase, when we start playing the good teams, we'll start playing well.
Yeah.
When teams start, you know, coming out at us, we'll start doing something. And he was asked on the BBC about that. After he said, you said earlier on we'd see a better version of England, and did we get to see that? Did we get to see Thomas Tuchel's England? And he was quite literally dumbfounded, like he had nothing to say. He was just kind of floundering around and couldn't really answer the question.
Yeah, he was asked, like, did we see Thomas Tuchel's England?
Yeah,
and he was like, I don't know what that means.
Yeah,
I'm like, well,
that's not a good sign.
No,
he also said he had no regrets.
Yeah,
which is a hell of a statement to make.
So, is Thomas Tuchel's position as England manager already untenable? Should he hand in his resignation? Should they sack him? Does this improve over the next few years? I know he's into 2028.
Well, like, England are going to do what they always do. They qualify
easily.
And like, obviously from an Irish point of view, we need them to qualify.
Yeah.
Take one of those automatic spots. Like, but nothing will be solved between now and the Euros in terms of they could blitz their group, but there's still going to be those questions beforehand. They could get a favourable draw in Euro 2028 and then they come up against France or Spain, and that's when the questions will be answered.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wonder what the players feel after last night. I wonder when he took over, they're thinking, this guy, you know, this guy's won a Champions League before. He is the man, like, when it comes to, you know, knockout games, one-off games, he'll get us through tactically. What are they thinking now after the way things played out in the second half, where he's thinking, this is the best you could do? 12% possession between Anthony Gordon's goal and the Lautaro Martinez winner. Yeah. That's stuff you wouldn't see in an FA Cup tie between a Premier League club and a non-league team. Yeah. You wouldn't see it.
Yeah, I think it was like something like 3 or 4 completed passes.
It's absolutely mental.
Pickford is probably most of them.
It's unfathomable. He 100% Pickford had more touches than anyone else, purely from just making
saves. Harry Kane didn't have a touch in the Argentina penalty area. Now, he does drop deep.
Yeah, of course, yeah. But you wonder, and I was kind of saying this to you earlier on, when you commit to the fact that you're going to throw all these defenders on, as he did when Dan Byrne came in at the 81st minute or something like that, you're thinking, you know that they are setting up now to get through this, and when they get the extra time, they're left with a bit of a mess if it gets there. You know, if they do concede, you've got to make more substitutions then. You've got to take probably lads off that you've already brought on. If you're going to commit to that, you have to bring on an outball. You have to bring on, and he hasn't been good in this tournament, but you have to bring on a Madueke, you have to bring on a Rashford, you have to bring on a Watkins, you have to throw on a Saka. You have to have something, because the only time they ever got out with the ball was Jude Bellingham running down the left wing.
Yeah.
And the Argentina players didn't even have to tackle him. They just stood around him, and it was like, we've nowhere to go. You ran down an alley and you're finished here. And Wayne Rooney said it after as well, when he was talking about it, and it comes back to the point you make about the players. And England aren't in a position where they can afford to look at someone, because it's an easy example to come to my head right now is Bellingham, and the fact that we kind of have seen the back and forth between him and Tuchel. In international football, you need your best players, and they can't afford to be thinking, right, okay, it's him or him, it's Tuchel or Bellingham. There's only one winner there, and that's Jude Bellingham. But when you're standing on the pitch as an attacker, and this is what Rooney was saying, when you bring on Dan Byrne, you bring on Ezri Konsa, and the players that are coming off aren't like for like replacements, you're standing there going, oh my god, this is horrible for me now, because you're going to have to do doggies anyway. That's what your job is, regardless of who's on the pitch. But you know yourself as an attacker that I'm retreating, and I know where this is going.
Yeah.
And that's a point where you start questioning whether the manager knows exactly what he's doing, and whether you're in line with what he's doing.
Yeah, there was a clip late last night I saw of Cesc Fabregas talking about this and Como, about how he would not take off an attacker for a defender, because it just changes the shift of mentality, and mentality, you know, has a large part to do with football as well as the tactics and stuff.
Argentina are chasing the game.
Yeah.
They bring on Nicolas Otamendi, they bring on Rodrigo De Paul, and they bring on Montiel.
Yeah, which they probably wouldn't have brought on, maybe, let's say, Otamendi and Montiel, because they probably wanted to keep attacking options.
Yeah.
But they had to do it because those players.
Lissandro's on yellow.
On yellow.
And even that, like, the fact that Romero and Lissandro Martinez are both on yellows.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what you're talking about, somebody like a Rashford or Watkins, it's an out ball. Now, it mightn't find them, but it keeps the Argentinian defenders honest.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Whereas they just parked. It was attack
on the edge of the
defense.
Box. Yeah. It was, yeah.
Yeah, they've done the same against Mexico, but I suppose we'll kind of get on to the final, and, you know, we could talk about England till the cows come home.
Just on the Mexico thing, though, before we do move off it, is there was justification to do it that time, and even then,
because
they're out of 10 men and they're playing in those conditions, and even then, regardless of the fact they came through it because Mexico's delivery was nothing short of pathetic for the entirety of the rest of the game.
Yeah.
But most people, I think, even English people, would say that after the water break, the 73rd minute, I think it was a bit of a later water break than we're used to seeing, that's still a long time in those conditions to decide to defend your box. And it worked out for them that time, but I don't think anyone would have would have been surprised if it didn't work out for them. And it's definitely not a recipe to go do it again.
No, and like, it's a long time when you have Lionel Messi on the opposition team, who just hung out to the right, like he did against Egypt. Now, obviously, England do their homework on their opposition. Surely they've watched the Egypt game and gone, well, he just pulled out to the right and pulled the strings from there. And that's exactly what he did. The short corner, the Enzo Fernandez goal, people are blaming Pickford. If you look at it, he's just taken a little step to the left because John Stones blocks his view slightly, so he can't get across to it. But Enzo Fernandez has basically been lining up that shot all half.
Yeah,
he took
and he's getting
of them,
closer
think, yeah.
and closer, and eventually he hits the target.
Yeah, Roy Keane said on the there was an ITV or no, sorry, an overlap or something,
watch along,
and
thing, yeah.
Roy Keane said basically he's been getting his range in.
That's
just like
doing.
Like a golfer.
Yeah. Well, not even intentionally. He's just taking shots, but eventually you let him take enough, one of them's going to hit the back of the net.
Yeah, I suppose like you know, England did lose the game, but Argentina did go on and win the game. Like a few stats here, they completed 58 passes in the attacking third before the 55th minute when Gordon scored and 148 after. Argentina's six goals between the 76th minute and the end of normal time is the most by any team at this World Cup, and Fernandez's equaliser was the fifth from outside the box, also the most of any team at this tournament. Messi has recorded a goal or assist in 11 straight World Cup games dating back to 2022, extending the longest such streak on record over the last 60 years. And Messi's assist for Martinez's headed winner was his 10th to the Inter striker, the most of any of his international teammates. It was Messi's fourth assist at the tournament, his most of any World Cup. And Messi has 33 goal contributions in 33 career World Cup games, 21 goals and 12 assists. He truly is the greatest thing I've ever seen.
The greatest thing you've ever seen.
I've seen some nice things over my life, been lucky to see, you know, amazing sights and different things, but Messi is just the best. He is like continues to beggar belief. I can't believe that we're watching him still at 39.
It's ridiculous.
And he's still continuing to produce the magic that he is and dictating the game in a way that just seems like it seemed impossible before the World Cup. Like we did all have these conversations before the World Cup, especially we love previewing it. And you know, the most we've consumed Messi since the last World Cup has been in clip format because, you know, we don't really watch the MLS, do you? So you might see an Instagram reel or a TikTok.
Or because it's on in the middle of the night, obviously.
Yeah,
we'd watch it otherwise.
True, but like it's just unfathomable that he continues to do this at this age. And
The best part about it is now that he's not perfect anymore. There was a period where he was. I think he gave the ball away. I seen a mad stat like 14 times in the first half or something. He got dispossessed or misplaced passes and all that sort of stuff.
Got knocked over a few times.
He slipped. Yeah. I think. Remember when he went to take a touch and fell over himself and all that sort of stuff. So
he would back it up with a lovely little flick around the corner.
See, remember when he got fouled in the first half?
He got Anderson booked.
It went from 0 to 60.
And in the
last. Basically, after the last hydration break, he just took over. And even the cross for the winner, like with the right foot, where Jed Spence obviously gets, there's a little bit of a touch from Messi where...
It's a shock of it, yeah.
Yeah, but you got it. Like you're thinking, it's a World Cup semi-final. You have to get out to him. Yeah. And the way himself and Nico O'Reilly went out to Messi, it was almost like they kind of got in each other's way.
Yeah.
They still put him onto his right foot thinking, okay, well... He's not going to do much. And he stands one up. And
honestly,
Dan Byrne, when that ball went in, I was like, where's Dan Byrne?
Mm.
Where is he? But he'd gone to the near post.
Yeah.
And I went over the head of Stones, who had been down a few minutes beforehand. I don't know how serious his injury
concussion,
was.
Yeah.
Because I think at the time...
He headed the ball.
Yeah. He headed the ball. And I think at the time, it was like, maybe you should go down and take the sting out of this because we're really under pressure here.
Yeah. Look, that's the thing that we've been talking about with England a little bit is the play acting and all that sort of thing that we wouldn't have associated with English teams in the past. Well, they wouldn't have associated with themselves anyway. And the Argentina team are the absolute masters of the dark arts. The dark arts, yeah, shithousery, whatever term you want to coin. England really, really did not do that well yesterday. They really did not do that well.
No.
And it's not something that if they did go and do it, we'd be on here giving out stink about, you know, the way that they acted for the last 10 minutes of the game to see it out. But yeah, it's something you have to do. And the teams that win these tournaments, they do it. And England don't seem to be able to do it. They don't seem to have the nous or the, whatever it is, the nastiness maybe, to go and do it.
Yeah. Six World Cup semi-finals for Argentina.
Unbelievable.
And six wins.
Yeah. Even Scaloni's record is ridiculous. And his substitutions.
Yeah.
They were spot. Like Nico Gonzalez, brilliant. The Simeone start, like was his instruction before he went on. Was like,
kick him.
We don't actually want you to kick the ball. We want you to kick players.
Yeah.
Because if that was his MO, he certainly carried it out.
Five fouls in 33 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I don't think he bothered in the second half. He's like, listen, Giuliano, don't get involved, mate.
I love the way he plays. He just gives it everything. I wonder where he gets it from.
Yeah, I don't know. It's amazing they've just thrown the blood of Diego Simeone into the team.
Yeah, I think he realises that he's maybe a limited player, let's say, maybe what John Giles would say back in the day.
Yeah,
but I think he just puts everything into it for his teammates. And I think as well, we talked on this last show about like brotherhood and kind of is it believable? And I think this Argentinian team showed that togetherness of their group,
yeah,
outweighed what England had.
Yeah, but even the anthem. I know they were booed. The anthems were booed, but looking at the faces of the Argentinian players, I was like, these lads, they are fired up. Like this,
yeah.
Like it's hard. You can't say it means more to a certain team, but it certainly looked like the passion coming out of them.
Like
they wanted this
during the English national anthem. The Argentinian fans were singing El que no salta es un inglés, like who doesn't jump as an Englishman. And I think that was a nice way to kind of go about it, to try and like drown that out. Whereas the England fans try to boo it, the Argentinian anthem, and they were kind of roaring it out. And you see even like Messi and Lisandro Martinez has like two players.
Martinez is grabbing, like hurting the two lads beside him.
I thought it was interesting as well that Cristiano Romero's team seemed to play the peacemaker most of the time in the little clashes, whereas like Paredes and Tagliafico were getting into it
until the game ended.
Yeah, and then he went straight. Well, he went to Pickford for the first goal, and then he went to Bellingham after.
Bellingham,
what about his quick feet on the edge of the box when he was being pressed?
Then he got booked in the same minute.
But when he plays like with his head switched on, he's a brilliant defender.
Yeah.
And like Otamendi came on in the second half, and then they pump balls towards Dan Burn, and Otamendi is unbelievable in the air. He won every single header against someone who's about 5 or 6 inches taller than him. In saying all that, Spain away in the final for Argentina. Did we think Spain? I'll be honest, I didn't think Spain were going to beat France on Tuesday, but were you surprised?
I was thinking if there's one team that could beat them, it would be France, because they just take the ball off them, and that's exactly what they did. And I think it showed up how limited Deschamps is in terms of tactically, that what he's done for most of his time in charge of France, he's just had better players than most teams, and it usually works. But the fact that they couldn't get the ball back, and then they were outnumbered in midfield, and when they tried to push up on Spain, Spain just always seemed to have an option, and like these guys can pick a pass and they can take the ball under pressure, so they just always seem to be able to get out. So Argentina will probably sit a little bit deeper. Like Argentina be fine to, like Spain haven't gone behind in the World Cup. So that would be a question. France hadn't gone behind in the World Cup. They go behind, they lose the game. Argentina have done it all. They've gone behind, they've gone 2-0 down, they've gone ahead where you think they're going to push on, and then they concede, and then they find another goal. You think back to the Cape Verde game. It's mad that Cape Verde drew at both finalists in 90 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, they're the story that just keep giving.
Yeah. What could have been?
Yeah. Inside the Odds is with Novi Bet. Miss out in the final bet builder leg. Get up to a 10-euro free bet back every day on football's biggest tournament this summer if your bet builder loses. Novi Bet, more power to you. 18+, play responsibly, gamblingcare.ie. Now, I have been tasked with a few bets over the last couple of weeks. We haven't been that close.
No, but to be fair, you've gone for a couple of outside shots, you know.
Yeah, we like to go big or go home. So we've gone for a 50-1 bet builder this week. Full-time result, I'm going to say a draw. Anytime goal scorer, Lamine Yamal and Lionel Messi, and Argentina to get over 2.5 cards.
Yeah, I think that's a cert.
Yeah, well, the referees have been fairly, stringent on the cards. But I just think with that, I'm trying to think of the 2022 final, which was just an epic, and I'm hoping we have something similar in this final. That's why I've gone for Lamine Yamal and a Messi goal score, Messi goal at any time.
It's great to see the two lads on the pitch together.
Yeah.
After being in that room with the photos and the little basin all those years ago.
Yeah.
When I say it's a cert, I mean the cards. I don't know about the rest of it. Like you
50
have
to 1.
It's a big price. It's a big price for sure.
Full-time result, a draw. Lamine Yamal to score. Messi to score at any time. And Argentina to get over 2.5 cards.
You could see it being cagey, but the Messi-Yamal thing is cool. It's objectively cool. Messi being like, he's obviously Argentinian, of course, but spent so much of his life in Spain.
Could have played for Spain.
In fact,
he nearly did.
Yeah, I say they ruined that one. That would certainly make them a little less tootless than they've been in the tournament so far.
The last Spain-Argentina game was a 6-1 win for Spain back in 2018. Lionel Scaloni was a coach on the coaching staff of Jorge Sampaoli at the time. Yeah. And this is when Argentina were really in the dredges before that World Cup in 2018. And Spain were a pretty good side back then as well. But I don't know, the teams haven't played each other that often. They only played each other once in a World Cup in 1966. Argentina were 2-1 winners over Spain. Argentina obviously got knocked out in the quarterfinal by England that year, and Spain went out in the group stage. Now, the footballing world has changed a lot since then, but
60 years on.
Yeah, but What do Argentina have to do to try and win this game? Because on the balance of things, Spain are the favourites.
Yeah, I think I'd kind of be with Phil on the, they'll probably sit back and ask Spain to
break them down.
Break them down, and we're not sure we've seen Spain be totally capable of breaking teams down, like, not to the point where they end up with a comfortable victory anyway. The Portugal sort of did that against them and had their own chances sparingly throughout the game, eventually did end up breaking them down. I could see it being similar to that. I think Argentina would struggle to, I think Argentina managed to make England bite to some degree last night. I know England went 1-0 up and, you know, should have seen out the game in maybe a different way. I think Spain would be able to deal with that a little bit better than, like, the physicality and that sort of thing. Not that Spain have more physical players than England, but just the way in which they play football, I think, just might be a little bit more difficult for Argentina actually even to get their hands on them and make the first half the way it was last night. So it's one of them. An early goal will be key. It's the same in all these knockout games. If there's an early goal, it'll open up the game and we might see a proper game. Mm. But as is the case normally with finals, you said this to me this morning and it's something I've said an awful lot. Finals are never that great. They can turn out to be great.
But that took a long time to get going.
It did.
Slow burner.
It did.
Like, the quality of the Argentina goals in the final were brilliant. But it wasn't until France almost were thinking, like, we're done here, and they just put the foot down. And
Argentina also in the same moment were thinking, oh my God, we're nearly there. And then started doing some silly things.
Yeah.
You know? So, and that's liable to happen. But I do just think there's a world in which Spain score and that's all that really happens.
Are Argentina more dangerous this time around because they have the, you know, let's say the weight of the pressure of winning the World Cup for Messi, they have that off their shoulders? Is this more like nearly like a free hit? Of course it's not a free hit, but it's, it kind of feels like that sometimes.
Yeah, I think so. It's going to be the last chapter for a lot of these players regardless of what happens. So, you know, does that bring the best out of them on the night? If it doesn't end well, I mean, they've had a hell of a run. They said, but Scaloni, two Copa Americas, a World Cup, and in a World Cup final. So they've achieved everything. If they go back to back, then they just, I mean, they're already legendary status in Argentina and world football. But if they go back to back, then they go to elite levels that not many could do.
It's a fairly similar squad as well, isn't it? So that,
I think that
does apply. I was kind of thinking there about players that have come in that haven't been there before, and there are, of course, a couple. You know, if they had a very different squad, but Messi was still there, a lot of those players would view it as, okay, I've got the best player of all time in my team here, I'm in a World Cup final. This may never come around again, and I haven't got the 2022 one. But that's not really the case. A lot of these guys were soldiering 3.5 years ago, and are still soldiering now. So I don't know, does it make them a more dangerous prospect, but it makes them a different prospect for sure.
Yeah, Spain obviously won the World Cup in 2010, have been in one World Cup final. What's different about this current Spain team under Luis de la Fuente than the 2010 team, let's say?
Ooh. I think the 2010 team were better in possession. They just a lot more shorter passes. I think when you look at the way they played at Euro 2024, they were a bit more direct in terms of get the ball out to the wingers. So obviously that's not really an option. Yamal didn't start the tournament fit. Nico Williams hasn't been fit. He's only just been coming on. And Alex Baena is, let's just say, he's functional.
Yeah, he's a bit of a facilitator.
So that's kind of taken a little bit of the edge off them. That's why I think it'll be a really tight, cagey game, and it could be just a 1-0. It could be very similar to that 2010 final where one goal decides that we could go to extra time.
That would be my feeling.
It could be a late night, you know, with the extended half time and all that, you know?
Yeah, half an hour long.
With,
you know, not thinking about the pre-match or the half-time, let's say, ceremonies, do we think it's going to be a good World Cup final?
I'll enjoy it, but I don't think it's going to be a classic. I don't really remember
too many
classics. Like, I remember, like, the first one I can remember is Italia 90. It was a horrendous game. Argentina, West Germany, decided by a penalty.
Yeah.
94, horrendous.
Yeah.
Like, shocking final. Like, the France 3-0 against Brazil, I mean, all the talk was the Ronaldo stuff before that game. So that, like, Yeah, there hasn't been.
10 wasn't
there hasn't been many. 2022 was probably the best. Like 2002 wasn't great. Brazil obviously won that one. 06 like wasn't a great game, but the storyline was amazing. 2010 I thought was pretty poor fun. As in like
what it was,
not exciting. Like and Holland tried to kick the living daylights out of Spain.
Well, 14 Argentina might assume that role on Sunday.
Yeah. 14 was one where I don't know, Manuel Neuer should have been probably sent off early on.
That wasn't a bad game.
I was alive for 86, lads, but I just probably didn't remember it that well.
Yeah. See, Ben Symes would have remembered it. He remembers the games before he was even born.
Yeah, better than the ones that he was is being around for.
Yeah, a bit like the way Endrick said that Bobby Charlton was his footballing hero.
We skipped 2018, obviously, which was just a bit of a walkover.
2018, that France team were just too good, and Croatia was just one game too far. And 2022 was obviously a bit of a classic in the end. In a word, Matthew, I'll come to you first. What happens on Sunday? Who wins? What's the score?
Spain win 1-0. One of their fullback scores.
In 90?
Yeah.
Okay. And Phil?
Spain 1-0 extra time.
Yeah.
Go on. Who do you think's going to win this?
You see the bet full time result, a draw.
Yeah.
Messi and Lamine Yamal both to score in a bit of a classic. Argentina have a couple of cards. And Argentina to win on penalties.
Okay. I do think if it gets the penalties, Argentina will win. Just because they have that absolute roaring goal.
Dibu Martinez.
I mean, Jordan Pickford could send his water bottle to Unai Simon.
True.
Yeah, I did. Did you see the Argentinian players looking at it and laughing?
They posted a picture of it, got posted on the interwebs, so it's there.
Yeah.
So I wonder, will that benefit Spain, or will it make them kind of second guess what's going on? Will it make the players second guess? I think by the time it gets there, they'll have firmly forgotten what was on the bottle.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it remains to be seen. Hopefully it's a good one. It'll be a great day of sport as well.
Yeah, massive, huge, big day of sport on Sunday. Okay, that's all for today's Inside the Odds. Thanks, producer Brona. Thanks, Phil. Thanks, Matthew. We'll see you again soon.
Inside the Odds with NoviBet. Miss out on the final bet builder leg? Get up to a €10 free bet back every day on football's biggest tournament this summer if your bet builder loses. NoviBet. More power to you.
18+. Play responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.